Following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you can join us once again here on a Sunday morning on 700 AM or AM 700, I guess we should say, KSEV. Before we get started, I just want to mention again, just because you hear certain information on today's show that might pique your curiosity, please don't convert that curiosity to action until you've talked to your existing advisors, accounting, tax, legal, investment, real estate mentor, etc. Hopefully they know enough about your current facts and circumstances to tell you whether or not what you heard is one, accurate or correct, and two, whether it might fit your current circumstances. Very important, that last part. And for those of you that may not have advisors that understand these areas and you're hesitant to dip your toe into the pond, good for you, but you do have a solution. You can go to our website at beaplannershow.com. And right side of the page, just below the title, you'll see a forms link, and I would direct you to the first form, Step 1, Client Profile. And if you will complete that and click Submit, I'll be happy to spend a few minutes chatting with you about your goals and objectives. And with that information in hand at that point, I can tell you how we might be assistance. We're going to talk about a number of things today as usual. I'll meander around and hopefully hit on some salient points along the way. But I just wanted to, I was again focused on the deficit, looking at that U.S. debt clock on the usdebtclock.org site. And it's crazy how big these numbers continually get. Current national debt, the part that we actually will admit to and put on a U.S. balance sheet, is closing in on the $34,900,000,000 mark. We're about $34,884,000,000 at the moment. So we've got about $6 billion. I think we've got a day or two before we'll eclipse that $34,900,000,000 mark. But more importantly, or I guess more of a concern in terms of the number of baby boomers that are expected to turn 65 every day from now through 2027. This phase has been dubbed Peak 65 because it is a mountain and it's going to be a problem for funding the significant medical costs that come along with each person potentially that qualifies under Medicare. But in any event, the number of people that will turn 65 every day now through 2027, so about 3.5 more years, is 11,200. 11,200 baby boomers will be, including myself, will be turning 65 between now and 2027. And in case you're wondering how that's going to affect Medicare, the trust fund that supplies the dollars to cover these medical costs. And by the way, the retiring baby boomers, as of 2020, doubled, I believe, doubled the Medicare and the Medicaid expenditures, just to show you how significant this peak 65 has been for several years now. But as a result, some pundits anticipate that the trust fund for Medicare, don't confuse this with Social Security. I think Social Security is right there neck and neck. It may be, well, the Medicaid bucket, the trust fund will be bankrupt by 2033 unless we do something. Currently, taxes will only cover about 48% of the health care cost associated with those two. But I believe Social Security's got about a 2034, maybe 2035 trigger when its trust fund is bankrupt, unless we do something. And again, I can promise you, Congress will do something. You probably won't like it, especially those of you that are high income earners, because my guess, and this isn't just me, I've read others saying the same thing, there's a bipartisan group in Congress, which that's always bad news when it's bipartisan this early before the disaster. It's like they both have agreed we're going to spend a lot of money, and I guess in this sense they don't have a big choice. I mean, there's choices as to how they could fund it, but what I've read that the bipartisan commission has pretty much already determined they'll have to do as one facet of attacking that exhaustion of the trust fund is they're going to tax the entirety of your W-2 earnings for Social Security. There will no longer be the ceiling. I think the ceiling's at like $168,000, give or take a few thousand or a few hundred. In any event, if you gross, you know, $800,000 on a W-2, expect to have $800,000 times 0.062. What is that? Almost $50K, just in my math challenged brain here. Let me see. 500. Oh, I'm sorry, I said 800, didn't I? 800 times 0.062, 400 or 49,600. Not bad for the math challenged CPA. And of course, that's just half. The employer is going to pick up another 6.2%. So you're talking about $100,000 total for an employee making $800,000 a year that will be paid into the Social Security fund. And that doesn't include the Medicare. The Medicare slash Medicaid is another 0.029. That's both employee and employer. So if you multiply that times 800, thousand, that comes out to another 23,200 split equally between employer and employee. So your share of that is going to be, if I can do this in my head, it should be an even 11,600. So for someone in the $800,000 earnings strata, their FICA and Medicare would be up in the $61,200 range. That's insanity. And it's still not enough. That one little tweak, and I say little somewhat facetiously, is really not even much of a Band-Aid. It's not going to fix the problem. We're going to have some systemic policy changes on exactly what we're going to cover. It's not just with Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. It's with a lot of government spending, because we are barreling fast down the tracks. The tax train, as we've said many times, is coming. And it's not just that the tax rates are going to go up. Our government, the ability for our government to continue to borrow is rapidly depleting. And our current debt to GDP ratio, which is GDP is probably the most favorite measure that can be looked at to determine how creditworthy we might be. The ratio has gone up significantly. Some economists say we're already over the 100% mark. Others say that we're going to be there in the very near future. It depends on the assumption set that you utilize to get that calculation done. Let's do this. Let's go ahead and take a break. We'll come back and talk about some of the current news in the real estate space and other areas affecting the real estate space, including the potential interest rate cuts that might be coming by September. And we'll be right back with more of the show with the Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Thank you.
With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little more.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at nprross.com. Nathan at nprross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
With big dreams and faded jeans.
Big dreams and
Welcome back to more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I'm going to direct your attention now, for those of you that have access to a device that can view the web while you're listening to the show. Shouldn't be too hard, right? If you have an interest in following along on any of the articles that we're going to talk about, you can go to the BeAPlannerShow.com to the resources tab at the top and then select news, and it'll bring you to our news page. And I've added a number of articles this week. The first one I put up at the top, even though it's not necessarily the most recent, but I thought it was important to note the fact that KKR, which is one of the largest global investment firms, KKR is stands for the three last names of Kravitz, let's see, Kohlberg, I believe, or Kohlberg, Kravitz, and what's the last one here? I can't ever remember. Kohlberg, Kravitz, and Roberts. It's not that hard. It's just I have a habit of referring to them as KKR like everybody else does. And in fact, this article doesn't even mention the three names. It's just KKR. In any event, one of the biggest or largest global wealth solutions firms, and they not only advise, they serve as a partner in many of their private equity projects. And they've just decided, as the article indicates, to spend $2.1 billion bet on the U.S. apartment market. And let's look at this article here. It's not a very long article. I'm curious if the $2.1 billion is the total, the all-in amount, or if that's merely a 30 or 40% down payment. Let's see. They acquired a portfolio, a portfolio of 5,200 apartments. So let's assume for a minute that $2.1 billion is the all-in number. Let's see if my calculator can go out that far here. Let's see, one more zero. Well, let me go at it another way here. If it's 2.1 divided by 5,200, that would work out to about 403,000 a unit, if I've got my math right. I would suggest that's probably an all-in number. Maybe not, but let's assume it is. That's even for a KKR, $2.1 billion is a significant investment. And it's a Class A portfolio concentrated primarily in the growing coastal and Sun Belt markets, including California, Washington, Florida, Texas, Georgia, and North Carolina, and also Colorado and New Jersey. It's a mix of mid-rise and high-rise. KKR will work with leading multifamily operators such as Carter Haston, MG Properties, and Dowlin Real Estate to operate the properties. I suspect if they're Class A in the right markets in these states, it could well be a 403,000 gross. That's not out of the range of possibilities, depending on, again, on location. I don't think it would be, well, I guess it depends on how new these properties are. Maybe 40,000 is the other possible calculation there. I wish this article were a little bit more specific as to the detail level that they report these numbers at, but let's assume they were putting 40% down. That would be $100,000 unit. Well, I think it's the first assumption. I think these are $400,000 units. Is my take. In any event, whether it's 40 or 400, again, KKR is a sharp operator or sharp investment consultant, and I think this bodes well for the U.S. apartment market that somebody like those guys have decided now's the time to put their money. As they say, we believe this is a great moment to invest in real estate as transaction activity starts to pick up on the heels of 2 years of dislocation in commercial real estate markets, says Justin Patner, partner at KKR and head of real estate equity in the Americas. Across our platform, we are finding opportunities where our scale, strong relationships, multiple pools of capital, and local knowledge give us advantages as a buyer of large pools of high-quality, irreplaceable assets. Well, that all sounds good if you're trying to raise money or induce some of your current clients to bite off on a piece of that position KKR is taking. But trust me, there's no such thing, in the multifamily world at least, as an irreplaceable asset. They can absolutely be replaced, although it is nice to find some that meet a criteria that you might deem to be irreplaceable at the right price. So good for them. That's great if they feel strongly about it. Let's go to the next article here that I put on the site. It's talking about the recent labor news, a cooling labor market. It's interesting how the inverse of what you might think is good news is doesn't work that way on interest rate cuts. We need to see some calamity to allow the rates to be considered for a cut. Friday's jobs report, now let's see, this was dated, yesterday, okay, so very current. Friday's jobs report showed solid hiring in June, plus signs that the U.S. labor market gradually cooled in the second quarter. That could lead to more pointed debates at the Fed Reserve's next meeting over cutting interest rates at its subsequent gathering in September. So this is largely conjecture. It's hope upon hope that we'll see something that would spur the Fed to cut the rates. But I tend to take a pessimistic view. I watch what Jimmy Dimon says, and I haven't seen Dimon move yet off of his hypotheses that we're a ways away from rate cuts this year, if at all this year. But it's good that the news we have isn't carte blanche going the wrong way, but it's still anything but a calamity that we would need of the proportion to get us a rate cut here in the near future. As the article continues, July is likely too early for a rate cut in the eyes of many officials. So a mild inflation report next week could stiffen the resolve of Fed doves who worry more about a weak labor market to argue it's time to tee up a September rate cut. The Fed's policy debates are inertial, owing to officials' desire to telegraph clearly their decisions. As a result, policy meetings tend to focus as much on what officials should do next time as on the outcome of the current meeting. So, bottom line, the central focus of the July meeting will be if and how the committee signals its openness to a September cut. Okay, let's see. Let's go to the Fool.com article, third on the list. The average American retires at age 61. There's a big problem with that, according to the Fool.com website. Key points of this article: the average retirement age is rising. It's currently age 61. Many workers expect to continue working later in life. If you're unprepared for early retirement, it could derail your finances. Well, that's kind of commonsensical. Let's go on down. Choosing what age to retire is a highly personal decision, I would agree. Some people are eager to retire as early as possible. Others prefer to continue working late into life. I know I've had clients that have done both, and I would tell you there sure seems to be a higher level of happiness with those that not necessarily work into their later life, but they're doing something, whether it's volunteering or there's something that drives them pretty much on a daily basis to get out and about in the community and to undertake activities that cause them to use their intellect, use their brains. It's like exercise. It keeps the body strong and fit, and it helps your brain, obviously, the more you work it. But in any event, research shows that the average American retires at age 61, but there may be a big hidden risk as a result. The average retirement age is changing, is the second heading. As of 2022, the average retirement age among U.S. workers is 61, according to a poll that Gallup undertook. That's up from age 59 in 2002 and age 57 in 1991. This is in line with other research suggesting that workers are choosing to retire later in life. A 2023 report from the Transamerica Center for Retirement Studies, for example, found that nearly half of baby boomers plan to work past age 70 or never retire at all. That's a big number. 50% of us baby boomers are planning to work past age 70 or never retire. However, the Gallup poll also found that among non-retired adults, the average worker expects to retire at age 66 as of 2022. In other words, the average worker ends up retiring a whopping 5 years earlier than originally expected. While early retirement isn't always a bad thing, it can spell trouble if you're not prepared. I think you could say that about not just early retirement, any retirement. The Transamerican report revealed that 83% of boomers who plan to continue working are doing so for financial reasons. That's no surprise, suggesting that their savings are falling short. Furthermore, only around one-third of the workers say they have a backup plan in case they have to retire earlier than expected. Retiring even 1 or 2 years earlier than planned can drain your savings by tens of thousands of dollars, because age 62 is the soonest you can begin taking Social Security retirement benefits. Retiring earlier than that may also force you to take even more money from your retirement savings. What can you do to protect your retirement? Well, there may not be much you can do to prevent early retirement due to job loss or health issues. However, you can take steps to ensure these unforeseen life events don't derail your retirement. Perhaps the best way to prepare is to increase your savings as much as possible, assuming that you'll retire earlier than you plan. If you still have many years left before retirement, saving even a little more now could add up substantially. For example, if you contribute an extra $100 per month to your retirement account, that could add more than $17,000 within 10 years, assuming you're earning a modest 8% average annual rate of return. While that's not enough to retire on by itself, it can help your savings last longer should you have to retire earlier. Lifestyle changes could help prevent future health problems and the related cost. And seeking out sources of passive income, i.e. real estate private partnerships, as an example, or side jobs, can provide another income source if you lose your job, or if you don't. In the case of passive real estate partnerships, you don't have to spend your time running the partnership. That's for a lead partner, a sponsor, a syndicator. You don't have to show up to run that property, or to find the debt to carry the property, or find the leasing staff to lease the property, the maintenance crew to do repairs on the property. That's all handled by the lead partner slash sponsor slash syndicator. In any event, you know, I of everything in this article, that's probably the most significant substantive idea, is to try to find some sources of passive income. And we like real estate. And that's probably a good time to bring our disclaimer to the forefront here. Note that none of our hosts on the Be a Planner show render legal, accounting, or other professional advice. As such advice is required, it is strongly recommended that a professional advisor be engaged. Further, the real estate private partnership syndications that I was just referring to are investment partnerships that involve multiple investors passively pooling their capital in a partnership under the United States Securities Exchange Commission's crowdfunding statute. I believe it's Rule 5. A syndicator, sponsor, or lead partner, as we mentioned, serves as the manager who is responsible for choosing a property, performing the due diligence, and arranging for its acquisition, including undertaking the necessary debt placement and equity raise. In other words, finding a lender, if necessary, serving as a key principal on the debt guarantee, so that you as a passive investor do not have to do that. That is a big deal in the real estate private partnership market, as opposed to you buying your own property, which certainly fits many people. Small apartments are absolutely something you should consider if maybe you want to be a little bit more active than the passive investor model, where you still would be able to offload day-to-day property management tasks to companies that are in that business. But in any event, the manager role is also tasked with managing the ongoing operations of the partnership and its assets throughout its existence. Here on the Be a Planner show and at my NP Ross CPA's firm, we do not sell investments. I want to be very clear. We do not sell investments. We do not recommend or promote specific investments, syndicators, sponsors, or lead partners. Rather, our efforts are focused on assisting your understanding of, quote, what you're signing up for, end quote, regarding opportunities you may be considering. We'll show you how to evaluate sponsors. We'll show you how to evaluate the opportunities and the private placement offerings, the doc stack, as I call it, or the deal doc stack, the document stack, if you will. It's a foreign language for most lay people, but we have reviewed hundreds, if not thousands, of these transactions. We know exactly what to look for, and we will make sure to ferret out provisions that you want to know about before you're going to sign up with any given project. And by understanding the metrics of analysis of these birds of a different feather, we might say, compared to the stock market, you hopefully will be able to select projects at the end of the day which can achieve the highest odds of a favorable outcome. It's not like we've got a crystal ball, but we understand pro forma math. We understand what the rental growth rates might be in given geographical areas of the country, so we can assess the pro forma projections that you're going to see in these types of documents. And we've know a thing or two, as the commercial goes, because we've seen a thing or two. And when we review pro forma apartment data, certain things will jump out at us that would go right over the uninitiated's head. And you might not realize that certain assumptions being deployed are unreasonable or irrational. And there's quite a few places you can stub your toe in the current financial climate. But anyway, let's do this. Let's go ahead and take our last break. We'll be back here momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be a Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make demands. Look like a woman, think like a man, be as good as or better than. Gotta woman up and take it like a man.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we've been going over some news articles, at least on the last segment. Prior to that, we were talking about the huge number of baby boomers coming into the Medicare net every day, 11,200. All the way out through 2027. That's a lot of people. In fact, let me just tap into my trusty calculator here. If we did 11,200 times just 1 year, that is 4 million people every year. And you know, 2027 is 3.5 years away. So you're looking at, I don't know, at least, 13, 14 million people or so. And I don't know what the average Medicare expenditure is per person. I know it obviously depends on a lot of factors, but that's a lot of additional spending to cover, even as our number of people working to support each one of those is dwindling. And that's part of the problem. That's the reason the trust fund is hurting. We've got fewer employees pitching in to cover the burden of those that are coming on board each day. And that's true whether it's Medicare, it's true in the Social Security arena, and I suspect there's other government spending that you could say the same thing about. If it's based on employees, you can definitely say that about. You know, I mentioned in the last segment we were talking about buying or investing in apartments where maybe you join with a group of 80 to 100 or more other investors and you each put in your, I don't know, $100,000 or maybe 50, depends on the syndicator, depends on the property. Smaller properties might be even less than that, but you know, some people may be putting in $500,000 and others are putting in 50 or 100 or 150. And you know, if you've got a certain level of financial wherewithal, you may look at the fees that are being charged on these larger transactions, and you may start to think like I am, which is, why not, instead of giving my $100,000 to a syndicator and then watch half of it melt away in fees that get paid to the syndicator and others in the transaction, why not consider buying your own smaller apartment deal? And you know, the thing that I look at, and I see this very often on transactions that we review for our clients, where 50% or more of their hard-earned capital that they're contributing to a given transaction is diluted with the fee drain. And that's both in terms of the direct, you know, hard out-of-pocket fees like acquisition cost, due diligence fees, debt placement fees, refinance fees, construction management fees, disposition fees. Just go down the line, and then you add the promote, which is the override that you're handing the syndicator, and that's typically anywhere from 20 to 50%, depending on the syndicator, depending on their level of prior successes. And for whatever reason, even the ones that haven't always been successful are still trying to squeeze out the maximum fees. And so bottom line is, at the end of the day, you may put $100,000 into a deal, and clearly 50 of it or more is not going into the asset that's supposed to make you more money. That stresses the returns on any transaction. And, you know, I would argue that at some point you're better off to simply take your funds and find your own small apartment building. And, you know, the benefits of small apartments is that the deals are probably, I think, they're easier to find than the large deals. I think at last time I checked, the National Apartment Association had somewhere between 400 and 500,000 members, and of those, clearly the large majority, if not maybe as many as 80% of those members, were small apartment companies or small apartment buildings that investors owned on their own. And, you know, when you think about the fact that the deals are somewhat easy to find, you've got low competition, more so than in, you know, with the larger, more professionally run apartment syndicators that are looking at the 200 on up number of unit properties. You've got less competition, and you've got less professional competition. And so that's another perk to focusing on the small apartment market. The funding is typically easier than a residential mortgage, because you have to remember that in the multifamily arena, the property itself is what's looked at for the most part to determine whether a transaction would meet the lending criteria of most lenders that will fund those types of deals. And the bigger the deal, typically the more profit you'll be able to make. But again, 20 to 50 unit apartment buildings are typically well within the grasp of people that might otherwise invest $100,000 or $200,000 in with a syndicator. And even if you find that you alone may not be cut out to run that transaction, network. Go to some of the local mentor / investor groups and get to know people, and maybe two or three people pull the resources and share the activity. There's benefits to doing that more than just the returns. You got a tax system currently where if you're active, you've got the ability to utilize the losses that come from these transactions. And almost every real estate, every multifamily real estate transaction, even with the tangible bonus depreciation being more limited now, this year we get, I believe, 60% is the threshold. Even then, you've got the ability to generate significant losses in the first year and ongoing that you can actually use if you're active, as opposed to being passive in a larger deal, which you will not be able typically to offset those losses against your other income until you have some passive activity income. So there's a lot of benefits to doing the smaller apartments. And then just in general, when we compare small apartments or apartments in general to single family, just the way we make money on apartments is significantly more desirable, because we're basically trading assets based on an income stream as opposed to being limited to what our neighbor sold their home for, you know, 2 weeks or 2 months ago, as the case may be. And that's the best you're going to do, because people look at price per square foot when they're buying a residential home as opposed to a commercial property, where they're looking at a net operating income. They're applying a cap rate, which it's a bit more complicated than this, but I'm going to suggest it's the rate that the buyer would seek to make in terms of a return. And it's just, it allows you to refinance. It's not just a buyer, it's also a lender, and it's the reason that we can buy a beat up old Class C apartment. We can renovate it using the lender's dollars in most cases, bring it up to market in terms of the amenity set and therefore the rental income rates, and we can turn around within the first couple years and refinance that property based on the improved net operating income and pull a significant chunk of our original capital out. And wonder what you might do if you found you could pull out 50-80% of the capital that you used on the first property. You might go find another one, right? And that's the name of the game in multifamily. And seen it done many times in the 20 plus years that I've been working in this space. And I would urge you to strongly consider, now that the market appears to be turning, it's still going to be dramatic moving forward this year and into next, but some transactions are out there. And if you know how to review them, how to analyze them, and clearly how to acquire and later exit, very important that you have an exit plan in place and that it's rational, and that it's rational at a cap rate that is actually attainable. It's not just a pipe dream that a syndicator or sponsor is selling you. You got to look really carefully at what the assumptions are on that exit, because if you're off even 1% or 2% on that cap rate, you're going to be lucky to get your original capital back. And unfortunately, we've seen that happen all too often here in the recent past. In any event, I believe we're close here to the end of the show, so I want to thank you for tuning in again this week. We hope you'll join us on Thursday at 2 p.m. right here on AM 700 KSEV, the voice of Texas. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Ooh.